This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. In this week's program, some 60,000 children are facing death in Somalia because of a lack of aid, and more than 1,000 game wardens murdered protecting wildlife. But first, Libya is governed by chaos and anarchy, and it's going to take time for it to become a functioning state again. That's the view of Martin Kobler, head of the UN support mission in Libya, UNSMIL, speaking after he updated the Security Council on conditions inside the North African country. Rival political groups and factions have been fighting for control of Libya, and a majority signed a statement last month in which they approved a proposed government of national accord. Reema Abaza asked Mr. Kobler why political paralysis was continuing.
In the west, in Tripoli, in the big towns, these are towns governed by militias, so they are just afraid, and they cannot speak up. But I went to the market in Tripoli. I just told the security people to stop, and then I asked ordinary Libyans, what do you want? And they wanted to have security. They do not want to have children kidnapped on the way to school. They want to have electricity, and they don't want to be bothered at night by militias here. That's what they want. And I asked them how to bring it about, and they clearly said, bring us this government which has to be effective. And that's what we are working for.
But now the minority is preventing the majority to move forward. What's next now?
I think one cannot have the process hostage of the minorities. Both the parliamentarians, they signed 100 signatures for the new government of national unity. However, the minority just cut the electricity and made it impossible to vote. Now, what are you doing in this kind of situation? Mm-hmm. Libya is a state which has no effective institutions. In fact, it's not a real state. It is, governed by chaos and anarchy. Now, this does not disappear overnight. And we from the United Nations, we have experience with strategic patience, but also with insistence to bring these kind of processes ahead.
You warned in your briefing to the Security Council that Libya could face the risk of collapse. What did you mean exactly by this?
Well, the financial resources of these countries are shrinking, and the oil price is falling, and the oil production is falling dramatically. There were 1.4 million barrels per day in 2011, and now there are 350,000 barrels per day with a falling oil price. So you can imagine that there is soon no money for salaries, no money for subsidies, no money for electricity and nothing.
What kind of support do you need from the international community and the countries in the region?
It is very important to be politically united and not to play games with the country, not to have proxy wars fought there, because everybody has one joint interest, and this is to fight the Daesh. It's very important to limit the expansion of the Islamic State, because this adds to the difficult situation. They are expanding at this stage to the east, to the west, but also to the south. They have bridgeheads in the south, and in Niger and Chad in the south, the neighbors, there are terrorist organizations, and if they team up with them, it will be very difficult to redress.
Over 1,000 game wardens worldwide have been killed in the line of duty in the past 10 years. The head of the UN-backed treaty that regulates global wildlife trade, CITES, has confirmed. In the fight against poaching and illegal trafficking of wildlife, frontline defenders such as conservation officers, custom officials, and game wardens are increasingly being targeted. On World Wildlife Day, observed March 3rd, people are being reminded that the future of wildlife was in their hands, with a special emphasis on the lives of elephants. CITES Secretary General John Scanlon began by sharing with me the latest figures of African elephants killed for their tusks.
We have some estimates for the period of 2010 to 2012, and over that three-year period, we estimate that something in the vicinity of 100,000 African elephants may have been slaughtered for their ivory. We have seen an upswing in the illegal killing from 2006 to 2011. 2011 was the high point that we detected. Over the last 4 years, including this year, the numbers have stabilized and slightly dropped, but they've stabilized at a level that is still unacceptably high.
There's some countries like Tanzania where it's reported that the country has lost at least 60% of its elephants in the past 5 years. It sounds like there's a huge demand for this ivory. Who's buying it?
The demand is driven, we think, in large part by people who are speculating. speculating on the price of ivory, the value of ivory, in the same way that someone might speculate in shares or futures or property. And we believe that this is what's been driving the industrial-scale poaching and illegal trade of ivory. But there is a lot of work underway, both in source countries, transit and destination countries, to bring this illegal trade to an end. And we're seeing unprecedented levels of cooperation.
There are also reports that there are militias and armed groups selling the illegal ivory to buy weapons. How is that being dealt with?
We have seen with this industrial-scale poaching and smuggling that it is being driven by transnational organized criminal gangs, very well-organized gangs, well-armed. But it's also been driven in some cases by rebel militia, such as the Lord's Resistance Army, and that was recognized by the UN Security Council itself, and also sometimes, unfortunately, by rogue elements of the military. So we're not here dealing with a situation of local subsistence poaching, which can be dealt with locally.
What about the people who are on the ground actually trying to protect these elephants, like park rangers who are getting killed in larger numbers?
Yeah, what we're seeing is that park rangers serving in the front line are being injured or killed or corrupted by these criminal elements. We saw something in the order of 1,000 rangers killed in the line of duty over the past decade. And it's this corrupting influence as well of this illegal trade and the criminal elements that are involved. So we're working very closely with the UN Convention Against Transnational Organized Crime, the UN Convention Against Corruption, and UN Office of Drugs and Crime at this endeavor. But what we're saying is we must keep our focus on the front line.
Some 60,000 children are facing death in Somalia because of a lack of aid. That's according to the UN's humanitarian coordinator in the Horn of Africa country. Political instability, recurrent droughts, and even flooding means that almost 5 million people, or half of Somalia's population, require some sort of assistance. The UN says it needs almost $900 million for relief work, but so far it has received just 2% of that amount. Peter de Klerk is the UN humanitarian coordinator based in the Somali capital, Mogadishu. On a visit to UN headquarters in New York, Daniel Dickinson asked him for an update on the current situation.
Well, in spite of quite significant political progress, the humanitarian situation in Somalia is still dire. 4.7 million people in the country are in need of humanitarian aid, and about 1 million people are in need of food aid. And out of those, about 360,000 are children, again, 60,000 of whom are in the risk of dying if no immediate assistance is given. So the situation is quite serious still, with a lot of displacement, new displacement taking place, a total of 1.1 million people internally displaced and 1 million refugees abroad.
A year ago, it was just 3 million people that needed some sort of humanitarian assistance in Somalia. Now, as you said, it's closer to 5 million. That's half of the total population. Why the change?
The drought situation has been quite serious this year as a result of the El Nino effect. We've also had major flooding in the southern and central parts of Somalia. And we had additional displacement as a result of military offensives. We've had also an influx of both refugees and forced returnees, I should say, from Yemen. So the numbers are actually going up.
The situation seems to be worsening month by month. Is there nothing the UN can do to reverse this trend?
We're looking increasingly at the underlying causes to some of these long-term humanitarian problems. For instance, for the 1.1 million internally displaced persons, we are embarking now on an initiative towards durable solutions whereby we address the underlying causes, such as land tenure, such as certain protection issues, urban poverty and urbanization. And we're working very closely with the government on this particular strategy.
Where has progress been made, if at all?
There's been significant progress in terms of the political process, as I was mentioning. The state-building process is on a very good course. Of course, it's not that easy because we're looking at, for instance, federalization in a country that has never known a federal structure before. But these things are moving gradually in a positive direction. You see a strategic engagement by the government on some of the durable solutions, as I was mentioning, and that would not have been possible even 3 years ago.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.